All right, we are live, ladies and gentlemen. Guess what? Debate is healthy. Conservatism, libertarianism, being a Republican, or just being a fan of limited government and individual liberty, these are not monoliths of thought. Disagreements are expected, especially on important topics. So this week, we have gathered a few topics that should spark some debate amongst the panelists here. These topics include millennials' work ethic, the potential TikTok ban, and the potential dangers posed by artificial intelligence. We're going to be talking about all of these issues. Feel free to jump in the comments, voice your opinions. I want this to be a big, open discussion. We're talking about all this and more on episode 440 of the In the Tank podcast. All right. Welcome to the End of the Thing podcast. As always, I'm your host, Donald Kendall. Joining me today, I've got Jim Lakely, VP of the Heartland Institute. How are you doing today, good sir?
I'm doing good. I don't think I'm as happy as you guys. You guys were dancing to the theme song in the background there.
What?
Kind of making fools of yourself as if you were trying to practice doing TikTok videos, which we're going to get to later on anyway. So
Yes,
the topic already has made you guys nuts. So
I'm very excited for this episode. I think there's going to be some pretty lively conversation. Also joining us, we have Chris Talgo, editorial director here at the Heartland Institute. How are you doing today, good sir?
Well, Donnie, I was just reminded that white men can't jump and white men can't dance. I'm going to try to delete that from my memory because that was you triggered me again. What the heck?
Coming out with the racial stereotypes right off the top of the bat. Chris Easily Triggered Talgo is what we've renamed him. Before we get going, because we have a lot to talk about, that message that I want to put out there every time at the beginning of the episode, especially to our audio-only listeners that are probably catching the show on a Friday or later, that you can join us a day earlier, Thursdays at noon, where we are live streaming this, the video of all of this, on YouTube and Rumble and X and Facebook, and you can join the conversation. You can throw your comments and questions in the chat. Maybe we'll show your comments on the screen. Maybe we'll address your questions on the fly. I think that this episode is going to be one that's going to have a lot of audience engagement because I'm very curious about your opinions on all these topics that we're going to cover. You can also support the show by hitting that super chat. We've got that super chat functionality enabled if you want to support the show that way. Or you could just hit that like button. Share this content, subscribe if you haven't already, leave a comment under the video. All these things help break through those big tech algorithms that prevent content like this from being shown to more people. So, last week, we had a bit of a debate. It was an interesting conversation, in my opinion, and I think some of us like having disagreements on the podcast. Sometimes it makes for good podcasting. You know, if we aren't all just kind of stumbling over each other to agree with everything that the other person's saying. So for today's show, I have a few items that I think will spur interesting conversation at the very least, and perhaps some heated debate. I think we'll find out pretty soon. But let me be clear. This episode is not a pre-planned or organized in a formal side A versus side B way. In fact, I'm not entirely sure where either of you two or, you know, or me in relation are going to side when it comes to some of these topics. It's actually very possible that there won't be any light in between our stances on some of these issues. On the flip side, it's very possible that we are very far apart from each other on some of these topics, so I guess we will see. Also, the topics, when I present them, I'm going to present them pretty broadly. This isn't a Lincoln-Douglas debate or some tavern-style debate with a set resolution that we're going to agree with or disagree with necessarily. And lastly, there is no real moderator here. Usually I moderate the discussions, but I plan on participating in these discussions. So let's just please promise to be civil and refrain from talking over one another as much as possible. Gentlemen, before I introduce the first topic, is there anything you want to say, get off your chest, clarify, or anything like that?
There'd probably be a lot more arguing if Justin decided to come on the show today. That's for sure.
Well, it'd also be a 2-hour episode.
We end up yelling at each other, so.
That is true. It would probably end up being a 2-hour episode, so maybe it's good that he is not a part of this. Chris, anything you want to say before we get into first topic?
No, I want to hop right in.
Let's do it. All right. So, first topic, millennial work ethic. Every so often, there seems to be a video that goes viral featuring usually a millennial woman or Gen Z lady that's upset about their lot in life, the problems of the 40-hour work week, and the fact that they can't seem to eke out a subsistence level of living. Usually these videos and the people in them are lambasted by conservatives. You'll see them featured on places like Fox News, where the commentators ridicule these people for having nothing more than a weak work ethic. So we do have one of these videos. This one kind of went, viral, I guess, a few months back. So let's go and play the clip 9 to 5.
I know I'm probably just being so dramatic and annoying, but this is my first job, like my first 9 to 5 job after college, and I'm in person and I'm commuting in the city, and it takes me forever to get there. There's no way I'm gonna be able to afford living in the city right now, so that's off the table. Like, duh, if I was able to walk to work and it'd be fine, but I'm not. So it literally takes me, like, I leave here, like, I get on the train at 7:30 and I don't get home till like 6:15 earliest, and then, like, I don't have time to do anything. I want to shower, eat my dinner, and go to sleep. I don't have time or energy to cook my dinner either. Like, I don't have energy to work out. Like, that's out the window. Like, I'm so upset. Oh my God. Nothing to do with my job at all, but just like the 9 to 5 schedule in general is crazy. Being in the office 9 to 5, like if it was remote, you get off at 5 and you're home and everything's fine. But like, I'm not home. It takes me long to get home. And like people that drive to the office, like you don't get off at 5. And I know it could be worse. I know I could be working longer, but like, I literally get off, it's pitch black. Like, I don't have energy. How do you have friends? Like, how do you have time to, like, meet, like, a guy? I don't know. Like, how do you have time for, like, dating? Like, I don't have time for anything. And I'm, like, so stressed out. And I'm also getting my period, so that's why I'm all emotional. But, like, am I so dramatic? It's fine.
So, Jim, first off, it's not even just conservatives that take part in the ridicule. We do have a clip of Whoopi Goldberg, who made news recently for taking millennials to task over some of these same ideas. And we have that video too, but maybe we could play it a little bit later because it does kind of cover some of the discussion that I think that we're going to have naturally. So maybe we'll save that for later. But Jim, I want to go to you first because this is... I don't want to be accused of setting up a straw man and how I introduced all of this topic. So feel free to clarify anything that I had to say on this topic and take your first swing and your stance on all this.
Well, I mean, I think there's just so many layers to that. I mean, first of all, it's a TikTok video. And so, you know, this is a young woman who, and there's a whole generation who thinks it's a good idea to just publicly rant or share your problems in your life. And maybe the reason for doing that is because they think that will help them with their stress, or I don't know. It just seems bizarre. I mean, we all gripe, we all have complaints, and we usually gripe and complain to our friends in person, or maybe even text them, or it's in a small group of people. But just this kind of new phenomenon of broadcasting for everyone, your gripes or complaints. And what happens is that when your gripes or complaints seem kind of silly, or in this case, she's complaining that she's got to work. She has to go to work. She has to commute to work. And that, you know, she works 9 to 5 and she has to go in. She doesn't get to work remote, apparently, even a couple of days a week. And this young woman lives in, I believe, I remember when this video first came out, it was back in October. You know, it kind of blew up on social media. So people were talking about it, and they, I think she lives in New Jersey and commutes into New York City and back. You know, of course she can't afford an apartment in New York, certainly not in Manhattan if she works in Manhattan. Just about everybody commutes into work like that. You know, it's expensive to live in a city. You can make other choices. You can live in a cheaper city. You can live out in the suburbs. You can move to a state like Kansas and maybe work somewhere else and do something else. You can find remote work. you know, it's just this idea, and this where we're getting into. I don't even know if she's actually millennial. She's probably more Gen Z, but it's, you know, those two younger generations than me, which is Generation X, that seem to have. It seems to cause them quite a lot of stress to actually operate their lives like an adult human being. It's always challenging for young people to get started in life. It's always challenging to have to be responsible for yourself. It's hard. Life's hard, you know, as you know, Candace Owens once she was asked about this sort of thing. And she goes, you know, life's tough. Get a helmet. I don't know what to tell you. And I think that applies to a lot of these people that, you know, seem to have a problem, as they call it, adulting. I hate that word, but it's the term adulting. And it's a meaningful word these days, unfortunately.
Yeah, I want to respond to some of those things. But before I do, Chris, I want to know kind of your take on this video and this kind of larger concept in general.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Jim, but I'm going to go more to the substance. I think that this is really the consequences of a generation that's been completely entitled, coddled. Everybody gets a trophies, just leading to a huge problem with arrested development. And like Jim said, they just don't want to grow up. And then I also think back to when I was her age and just graduated college and working. Geez, I at one point had three jobs, and it was like there was no time to do anything other than work. Because, it, you know, back in those days and, you know, the early 2000s, when I graduated college and began my work career, you had to prove yourself. And it was, you know, like a dog eat dog world. And it was whoever is going to work the hardest. And that was one way that they funneled out people who were not really, you know, going to be hard, productive, dedicated workers. So to me, that entire notion of you got to pay your dues, you got to start at the bottom and, you know, work your way to the top, has been eliminated. And they just think that they're supposed to start, you know, at the top and supposed to have a cushy job and make a ton of money, and life should just be smooth sailing right after college. It's not the way it is. It's not the way it was. And then it also makes me think back, gee, you know, how about 100 years ago when people were actually, you know, doing manual labor for like 14, 15 hours a day, and it was really actually tough. She probably gets to go sit in a chair and look at a computer in an air-conditioned office. She probably has zero discomforts other than the fact that she has to wake up at 7:30. Oh, geez. And then she gets home at 6:15. Oh, geez. And she doesn't have time to work out. Well, if you want to work out, wake up earlier. I mean, come on. I wake up super early and work out before I come to work. I mean, I've been doing it my whole life. It's just, you know, life is also about sacrifices. If you're unwilling to make sacrifices, you know, it's going to be really tough. So you can't have it all.
So just to address a couple of things, just off the bat, Jim, you started off talking about this idea, this new kind of thing about people kind of griping on TikTok and all of that. I that is something that I will not defend. I think that is a terrible issue. I've said for a while that social media has facilitated an environment where people are having these private conversations or seeking help from a million strangers when in fact they should be talking to two friends or something like that. So I will definitely not defend that. That is probably an issue that's going to relate to our secondary topic about TikTok, but put that to aside for now. But I do want to say that I've been wanting to talk about this topic for a while. Jim suggested talking about this video months ago, and I objected, basically saying that I'm sympathetic to her and others like her, and I don't want to just like pull up this video just to dunk on her, like the Whoopi Goldberg video that we still might show a little bit later. And I'm sympathetic because I do think the economy is worsening, and I do think that the expected standard of living is decreasing over the last couple of generations. So using Bureau of Labor Statistics and research done by the American Enterprise Institute, the inflation-adjusted costs of all sorts of things have skyrocketed for a while now, but definitely over the past 20 years. Andy, I'm going to send you a link if you want to show this. But it shows the chart of the different costs of different things in relation to just kind of like a zero-cost increase. But it shows that food prices are up. This is since the year 2000, not just the last couple of years. Food prices are up 75%. Childcare is up 115%. Medical and hospital services is up like 200%. College tuition is up 175%. Housing is up 70%. And all of these things have gone up while the median household income in the United States has only risen by 15% over that same time span. And all of these problems have seemingly gotten worse in COVID and the later couple of years of pretty heavy inflation. Inflation's crazy. Energy prices is crazy. Cost of cars is crazy. Housing, which a lot of people were expecting to cool off, is still crazy. So yes, I am sympathetic to people that got spit out of our education system into a world where it seems impossible to achieve the things that are expected of them. Putting off starting a family, potentially sailed with tens of thousands of dollars of college debt and all of that. And if they complain about it, they're met with criticism and they're just told that they're not working hard enough. So that's kind of my opening salvo, but feel free to respond.
Yeah, just one quick response to that. She wasn't mentioning the high cost of goods. She was mentioning primarily that she just literally doesn't like to be at work from 9 o'clock to 5 o'clock and get home at 6:15. I mean, I remember times where I would get at home at like 11 o'clock at night after, you know, going to like my second job. So it's not that she's sitting there saying, oh, gee, I'm willing to work so hard, but it's not that I can get ahead of my, you know, ahead and, you know, have like a nice like life. Actually, if you look at the background, if that's her apartment or her house or whatever, she looks like she's living a pretty decent lifestyle. Her number one complaint was, I literally don't want to be in an office for 8 hours and I don't want to get home at 6 o'clock and I want to just be able to, quote unquote, have more fun. So I don't really think that she was making the argument that you're making.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of it was talking about how she couldn't afford living closer to her work. So there's a little bit of that. But talking about this in more generalities as opposed to her specific case. Jim, I got one more kind of point that I want to make on this. But if you want to respond to anything I've said so far, feel free.
Well, I mean, just looking at that chart, and that's from the American Enterprise Institute.
Yeah.
Okay. Almost all the things on the north side of that chart, and the chart is a little bit maybe a little bit deceiving, because if you look at the food and beverage and the housing, I mean, that's really gone up, you know, since 2020 or basically started in 2021, huge increases, especially with food. That's Bidenflation, man. That was a government decision that made that worse than it was already trending. But college tuition and fees, that's a government problem. I mean, universal, you know, everybody guaranteeing student loans. I mean, that's the oldest scam going. You know, it was a scam when I was in college in the late 80s and early 90s, and it's only gotten a lot worse, because when government guarantees these loans, the tuitions go up, all the services, the expenses all go up in college because they know it's going to be covered no matter what. College textbooks has always been a scam. from way back in the 70s, that was a big scam. And then medical care and services and all that stuff. I mean, how much of that is government's fault? You know, subsidized Obamacare. Yeah. I mean, almost everything on the north side of that ledger is a government exasperated problem. Whereas if you look down below and the things that are in the blue lines, the government has almost no involvement in any of those products and services and economic indicators. So, you know,
yeah,
that's what I take from the chart.
That is great. And I'm glad that you explained that, because part of my next thing was explaining all of that. Because like my biggest issue with all of this is that, you know, conservatives seem to interpret videos like that one as like a supposed indictment of capitalism or something. Like the girl crying is secretly trying to promote socialism or something like that. And you couple that with the fact that conservatives, including me, I'll put myself into this, have been complaining about how the government is creating undue burden on the economy for generations, whether it's high taxes, burdensome regulations, poor fiscal policy, money printing that results in inflation, even policies that directly lead to the prices going up off of those things, like you know, Jim just mentioned a handful of those. Government actions that make healthcare go up, government actions that make house prices go up, government action that makes college tuition go up. And then when someone says, yeah, you know, all of this stuff is terrible, I'm struggling to get by, we slap them down and say, suck it up, work harder. Like, I just don't understand how these like two worldviews like fit together. Like, are we acknowledging that like the government and everything is making things worse? And then when someone says, yeah, things seem worse, we're like, no, you're just not working hard enough.
Well, but Donnie, I think that goes back to what I was originally saying. It's not that her primary argument is not that, hey, the cost of living is going up and I'm willing to, you know, do it as I do everything I can to, you know, to remain prosperous. Her, I think that her core message is that she's extremely lazy and just doesn't want to work that, you know, that hard and just expects to be given things. So I would actually say that this is probably a government/cultural influence upon her, which, you know, I think that that's been happening for the past decade and, you know, in much more than it was when I was growing up, where, you know, now you're just, you know, now there are a big portion of Americans who think I should just get things for free, whether it's from the government or from others. And I think that that, you know, cultural mentality is seeping through. And I think that it's becoming much more, it's resonating with younger people because they've been brainwashed in high school and in college, and you know that's the way it just should be. And you know, I bet that she does think that capitalism is unfair, and that, you know, socialism and more government handouts and goodies would probably rectify what she considers the problem. But I disagree with her on the premise of the problem. I think that she's fundamentally lazy.
Yeah. So I mean, like, I'm talking about this in more of just the general sense of the millennial work ethic or supposed lack thereof. And, you know, for every one of these videos, you could find a whole bunch of other posts or videos talking about the, you know, I'm working this amount of hours and I'm still like unable to get by and all of that sort of stuff. And I feel like we're getting better as conservatives in some areas when it comes to this. I think for a while there was a similar knee-jerk reaction when it came to the topic of healthcare, where anyone that was seen as criticizing our healthcare system was secretly advocating for universal healthcare. And I think now conservatives like are fine acknowledging that like the screwed up healthcare system, that's just a fact and that we should do something about it. And I just like imagining now someone being like, oh yeah, our healthcare system's messed up. It cost me $15,000 out of pocket, you know, for the baby that we just had. And it's just like, suck it up, work harder, you know, or some old lady that's remarking about the price of eggs and milk going up by 50% in the last few years. And it's like, shut up, you old bag, work harder, buy those eggs, you know, or something like that. So I don't know. I just feel like all the things that we're talking about, of the government screwing up the economy and all of that, is having an effect on the future generations. And then us criticizing them, ridiculing them, is probably going to more likely push them to the other side. If the free market advocates out here are just chalking it up to them being lazy, then it's just like, all right, well, forget your side. I'm going to go to the other side.
No. Two things can be true at the same time. The government intervention over the past, you know, 50 years or so, and especially since, you know, Joe Biden came into office, has definitely led to a spike in goods and all sorts of misallocations, and just, you know, it's, you know, caused major damage to the economy. I completely agree with that. However, I'm just trying to say that her primary concern was not that. Her primary concern, and we just watched the video, was she thinks that she shouldn't have to get home at 6:15. She shouldn't have to, you know, like go and work in an office 5 days a week. So I think that her primary complaint was based on, I don't want to, you know, go to work for 8 hours a day. I don't want to have to drive. I don't want to have to do all these things. And I also think that that is probably related to the pandemic. And the notion where, you know, people were like, yeah, I just don't want to like work, you know, in the office anymore. I want to work from home. And now that we are a couple of years out of the pandemic, we are seeing more and more companies saying, no, actually, that's just not working. You got to be here in the office. So I don't know what she does for a living, but some things you just cannot do from home. You got to be in the office.
So, Jim, I feel like I've addressed kind of that point of me not specifically talking about this video. But if you want to jump in kind of your response to anything that I've had to say so far, feel free.
Well, you know, actually, I had found the second most popular, I guess, videos out there are videos of millennials complaining about how expensive everything is getting. One that really took off a few months back, it was a young woman who was living in Brooklyn by herself in her own apartment, no roommates, and complaining about how expensive it was to live. I lived with roommates until basically I met my future wife. You know, I lived with roommates well into my late 20s. And, you know, that's just kind of the way it went. I lived in a house with six other guys. And then, you know, the idea to have roommates, like, that's a no-brainer. I mean, I know that's, it's, you know, it's not that uncommon, actually, obviously, But be complaining about how expensive housing is when you're unwilling to share your space with somebody who can help defer the cost is kind of crazy. And, you know, like I said, I didn't pull up these videos, although I watched them. I gathered them. I just didn't produce them for the show today. But a lot of complaints about how just how expensive everything is, like food and Starbucks. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I guess you should cut Starbucks out of your budget, if you even budget. You know, when I was young when I was coming of age as an adult in the early and throughout the 1990s, you know, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have a lot of the technology that we have today that is expensive and now people consider absolutely essential. It would be inconceivable to live your life without a smartphone, because all the generations coming up, they've always had them. They've always had screens in their pockets, you know, powerful computers that they can use to look up and do anything, almost anything. You have the world in your pocket, but that has a cost. That's expensive. An iPhone is, what is that? I don't know, $800 if you join a 3-year plan or something like that. So life is more expensive these days just because of technology. In many ways, it hasn't made life more affordable. It's made it less affordable because you feel like you need to have these things in your life. One of the videos I saw was a woman complaining sitting in her new car about how expensive everything is. And she's running out of money. It's like, maybe you shouldn't have got a new car. I don't know. It just seems weird to me that while things are expensive and it is tough out there, and you do start with a low salary when you get started, because you have to prove yourself worthy of more money, more investment from that company to have you as part of their team, to have you as part of their mission, which is, if you're in the for-profit world, to make money. To make this, have this, if you're a small business owner and you're hiring someone to be, to work at your pizza shop. I worked in pizza shops. I was professional journalist. I was still working in a pizza place into my late 20s so I could pay all of my bills and have a little bit of money left over while using my degree. Life is tough. Life was even tough back then. It was hard to afford to live on the salary I had as a young journalist. So I had to do something else in order to survive. And just barely get over substance level survival. That's just the way it was. I'm not saying that, I'll just say it. I didn't complain about it. I was happy. I was a happy person. And I did work hard. And I thought there was value in working hard. But, when things are more expensive, things are always more expensive. It's never been, there isn't this magical time. And I hope we play the Whoopi Goldberg clip, because she makes this point too. There's this perception by the younger generations that I had it easy, that we had it so easy and we had it so good. We didn't have any of the challenges, especially financial challenges, that young people today have in the world. False. That is 100% not true. It's always hard. And you just got to suck it up and go forward. And that's why I'm a conservative. I don't want anyone else to take care of me.
Don't you see how this argument, though, makes it seem like all of the government stuff that we've been complaining about is all meaningless? It hasn't made anyone's life
worse.
Not at all. Just suck it up and work harder. That's what it seems like.
Real quick, can I just give like another take on this? So one of my sisters, she works at a grocery store in the Chicagoland area. My brother works at a golf course in the Chicagoland area. Last year, I can tell you that my brother, he had so many employees, millennials and Gen Zs and, like of that nature, just quit or not show up for work. This week, he's told me that he had two interviews and they just no-showed. My sister, who works at a Mariano's right, very close by to where we are, she's, like a front manager, said that is so common now, where 20-year-olds or, 18-year-olds or 25-year-olds, they work for a week and just, oh, screw this. This doesn't work for me. Or they constantly coming late, don't show up for work. So I am coming from the macro perspective that the work ethic across the board for younger people has declined. And I think that is like what this is really about. I agree that the cost of living for some things definitely is a problem right now. That's where I'm coming from on this.
Yeah, one. As a side note, somebody buying a $800 phone is not the thing that's going to stop them from being able to obtain a house.
When I first started out, geez, I was living in a studio, a tiny little studio. Everything was hand-me-downs. Everything was, that's just how it was. I mean, my car was, a piece of junk. You know, it's like that's how when you get started, that's how right. It is.
Conservatives are always wondering, why can't we get the youth to side with us on stuff? And it's because when we're met with the problems that they're perceiving, our answer isn't, oh, yeah, you know, all the stuff that the government's doing to try to help, it's actually making things worse. It's no, just suck it up and work harder and stop buying avocado toast. I just think that's such a losing strategy. And I think it kind of it admits that all of the stuff that we've been complaining about over the last 20, 30 years is largely meaningless and that it's not actually making anything worse in life.
Okay. All right. So now we're going to argue. And I'm sorry I talked over you. You said we shouldn't talk over each other. So then we can have a debate and we can argue.
Wait.
Yeah. Okay. So if my attitude sucks and is going to drive the younger generations away from, you know, conservatism and away from they're attracted to the socialism because government is daddy and he will take care of me. So what's the answer, Donnie? How should if my attitude sucks and Chris's attitude sucks, why don't you give the pitch? 30 seconds on how you address this to that generation. Go.
Forget it, Donnie. You're out of your element.
How dare you set me up for that? How dare you? I think acknowledging that, yes, all of these things that we're trying to achieve in life, whether it's starting a family and owning a home and all of this stuff, is getting harder. It is. Acknowledge that. The home prices have been skyrocketing. It's insane how much home prices have gone up. It's insane how much the prices of all of these things got up. But guess what? The solution to that isn't to go to the Bernie Sanders route and have the government pour on all these other things and more programs and all of that. It's actually to counterintuitively do the opposite of all of those things and to run towards conservative principles and limited government and individual freedom. That's going to be the thing that drives down the cost of the living standards. It's going to increase the drive down the living costs and increase the living standards and all of that. That's the pitch. It's not just like shut up, stop eating avocado toast and grow up. That's not the solution. All right. Let's move on to the next thing.
All right.
TikTok ban. Look, we're actually kind of on time here, guys. TikTok ban. So this is an interesting one that I don't think that we've discussed at all. Definitely not on the show. I don't even think that we've talked about this in person between any of us here. It really seems like the positions on this, whether conservatives or liberals or whatever, have been pretty fluid, especially in the last several days. To me, it appeared as though that the positions on this ranged from, yes, we should ban it, to TikTok, what? I don't care. So the impetus to do this is based on the accusation that user data is gathered by this app is used by the Chinese Communist Party for intelligence reasons or for whatever reasons why they would want to use that data. Fast forward to just the other day, the House of Representatives passed a bill that would either force TikTok's Chinese owner to either sell the video social media app or have it banned in the U.S. entirely. The bill passed with broad bipartisan support, 352-65. This appeared to me as more of a Republican-led effort. However, in recent days, Donald Trump came out against the ban, and this led several other people to change their tune as well. And now there are a bunch of drive-by political commentators mocking Congress from working to ban TikTok while important matters are either neglected or stuck in some sort of stalemate. So I don't think that revealed my position on this at all. So I'm going to let's go to Jim first on this. What are your thoughts on a potential TikTok ban?
You know, I'm a little conflicted on it, to be honest. You know, I'm not in favor of government basically having the government have enough power to like completely destroy a business, even if it's foreign owned. I'm foursquare against that in principle. That's not a good thing. However, TikTok is being used by our enemy, which is the Communist Party of China. You know, there are they call them a global rival or whatever, but you know, it's basically going to be the superpower of the world for the rest of this century is either going to be the United States or it's going to be China. And I think we all should agree that it's better if it's the United States and not so great if it is China. And they do use that app for nefarious purposes. They are collecting people's data. I don't have TikTok on my phone. I don't look at TikTok videos unless somebody reposts them on Twitter or something. So I don't even look at them online. I'm not going to allow myself to be, you know, a victim of the data collection of a enemy of the United States. And so should the government be taking more concrete steps to prevent that from happening? Yeah, like I say, I'm kind of conflicted on it. There's part of me that says that thinks that that's a very good idea for the obvious reasons that we don't want China, you know, grabbing all of our data and basically using it to spy on Americans. Mm-hmm. However, there's also the point, you know, it's funny. It's like TikTok in America or in the West is basically, well, like that video we showed earlier, that was a TikTok video. TikTok in America is in many ways, it's a window into the mentally ill. I don't mean to be really blunt about it, but there are, you guys remember the trend when people would share on TikTok, they just stare into their cameras and pretend to have multiple personality disorders.
Oh yeah.
And so that was the trend. And it caused a social contagion where mm-hmm. all of these, almost all of them, teen girls who are going through transitions, and anybody who's ever had a teen raised a teenage girl knows about all of this. You know, it's a very tough time in your life.
By transition, he means like puberty, not yes. Transition in the way that it's used more along the lines today.
Yeah, but you know, so yeah, there was it causes social contagions, like all of these people who claimed and to have multiple personalities. Uh-huh. Actual multiple personality disorder is so infrequently diagnosed that it almost doesn't exist. And in fact, some researchers say it's never existed, that Sybil was a fraud and all this other stuff. So TikTok just accentuates some of the worst trends, social trends in this country. It is targeted toward kids. It can in many ways, and does in many ways, destroy their childhoods. It is not very, it's harmful, period. To teenagers in almost every case. And I think some of the proof of this is that the TikTok that we experience here in the West is not the TikTok that young people experience in China. In China, TikTok that they get to have, it promotes science and positivity and adherence
state
to the
propaganda.
Party and to China and all that stuff, but it's used to have a positive influence on the youth of China, and it's allowed to be a negative to the youth of the rest of the world. That seems like a pretty brilliant strategy. And there was a survey, and I'll wrap up and give it to Chris, but there was recently a survey that asked TikTok users in China what they wanted to be when they grew up. Mm-hmm. And because TikTok is used in a positive way, the most popular answer was astronaut. They asked people in the teenagers in the West, what do they want to be when they grow up if they use TikTok? And they said social media influencer. That was the number one goal of their aspiration as a child, is to be a social media influencer.
Yeah, there's
that's terrible. And that's how you lose. That's how you lose a global war of influence. And that's how you lose the superpower race when those are the two, opposing aspirations of each generation.
Yeah, somebody, I think it was Tristan Harris, who was like the expert on social media and big tech and all of that. He was the guy that was behind The Social Dilemma, big documentary on Netflix a while back. He referred to the difference between the Chinese version of TikTok and the American version of TikTok is it's like spinach in China, as opposed to like morphine in the United States or something along those lines. Chris, I do have a lot to say about TikTok, but I want to see what your thoughts are before I have anything.
Oh man, this one's tough. I'm conflicted, just like Jim. I mean, I understand the argument that's being peddled that says that, hey, this is vacuuming up data and sending it straight to the CCP. And it's not just what's happening on TikTok. TikTok, the app, as far as I know, means that they can they have access to all your searches, keyboard strokes, GPS, like everything. So by even having the app on your phone, you are basically just giving all your data to the Chinese Communist Party that could be used against, you know, America in some form or fashion. I get that part of it. I also get the other side. You know, Rand Paul made a pretty good argument about this and others, the free speech side of this and, you know, the slippery slope argument where, hey, if it's TikTok today, maybe it's X tomorrow and who knows what it is, you know, 2 weeks from that or 10 years from that. So there's that aspect of it. I think by and large, TikTok is poison for America's youth. You know, I don't have any social media presence, but, you know, I know a lot of people who do. And it just seems to me that it's making them more depressed, more anxious, and it's not really, you know, doing any good. And lastly, this has been one of the big arguments is that, you know, speaking of millennials again and Gen Zers and such, they get most of their news from TikTok. Mm-hmm. So if the Chinese Communist Party controls the algorithm and mm-hmm. they are able to put, you know, news in front of people that's, you know, in their best interest, not in our best interest, you know, that's a potential humongous problem as well. So it's not just this, you know, the silly videos, the dances and, you know, that kind of stuff. It's the fact that TikTok has become the primary news source for, you know, young Americans.
Yeah, so I think there's two kind of major aspects of this that we have to take into consideration when we're talking about banning TikTok or not. The first one is that this, when it comes to social media, this is the social media equivalent to black tar heroin. Like, this isn't just social media where you go on and aimlessly watch videos. Like, this stuff is basically weaponized. I went into a deep dive in this last night researching for this episode, and it is astonishing how involved the algorithms are for the content selection for their users and stuff. So I think people should be pretty familiar with the idea of a recommendation engine. This is seen on a lot of things nowadays. Netflix would be a good example of it. You turn it on, they have a recommended feed based on the content that you've watched. Hey, you might like this movie too. There's that. That's kind of standard in pretty much all tech, all social media nowadays. But the recommendation engine was just like propelled into a whole nother level by TikTok. So what they do is based on your interactions with videos, whether you're liking them or sharing them or just lingering on the videos or watching them in their entirety, it all sends back information that the algorithm uses to basically figure out who you are as a person so they can continuously feed more things that are probably that you would be interested in. So, you know, a person that's into animals will be shown more animal videos. A person that's into sports will be shown more sports videos. But it doesn't stop there. It increasingly gets more and more niche. And then the niche videos are likely ones that have lower view counts, haven't been moderated, have potentially dangerous, you know, content or anything like that. And there is very specific examples of this. The Wall Street Journal did an entire investigation on TikTok where they created a bunch of bots, like 100 different bots, each of them assigned with a certain basic like character traits or something. You know, this person's into politics, this person's into sexual content, you know, this person's into whatever, you name it. And as they let these bots interact with TikTok, they noticed after a while that they were getting extreme content pushed to them. The person that was interested, labeled as being interested in sexual content, was being shown like weird S&M and kink videos, where the person that was into politics was starting to be shown like conspiracy stuff and kind of off the wall content. And then just a couple of months ago, there was a trend going around until TikTok actually had to come in and manually stop it, where people were being exposed to these videos of youth in America, their reactions after having just read Osama bin Laden's Letter to America, which was originally published in 2002. So this spread, and millions of people saw all of these videos talking about how, you know, the United States and they're like the devil in the world and all of this stuff, reading Osama bin Laden's Letter to America and then sharing it amongst all of their friends and family. So the algorithms are like, if they're not programmed to be, they're inadvertently malicious when it comes to the content.
They are programmed to be.
Well, and like I said, some of this content, when it's that niche, isn't moderated. So there are videos promoting suicide, promoting drug use, promoting eating disorder, even worse than that, they're finding the people that are most vulnerable to this sort of messaging and then pipelining it to them. It's like I said, it is like the social media equivalent to just like hardcore drugs.
Well, you bring up the hard drugs thing, and it's a very interesting that you bring that up, and ironic in some ways, because we know that China is, you know, flooding this country with fentanyl. And we also know that many teenagers get their fentanyl or their drugs using TikTok. So do you think it's possible that China is trying to poison the minds and bodies of America's youth so that they can win what Jim describes as, you know, the race for the next, you know, global superpower?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put it past them, honestly.
Yeah. I do.
The second main part is the area that Jim kind of covered already, that this is basically Chinese Communist Party spyware. The data that's being collected from you for all of those reasons that I mentioned to create the recommendations that creates a profile of who you are is used by Chinese intelligence for whatever reason that they see fit. Additional information that's collected include, and this is just reading from their terms of service. This isn't me just getting secondhand information. This is going into their terms of service and seeing what type of information that they collect. Includes, but is not limited to, your IP address, geolocation, unique device identifiers, browsing and search histories, your screen resolution and operating systems, app and file names and types, keystroke patterns, and in some cases, even precise GPS information can be collected off of your phone. It's so compromising that the U.S. government has already banned the app on federal employees' government-issued phones. So for all of those reasons, I think it's very clear to say that, like, TikTok in general is a net negative for society. But again, it's still whether or not you want to open the door for government to come in and squash it with their big ban hammer. I think that's kind of the debate.
Two other super quick things, and, you know, I'll let Jim, you know, chime in here. The Chinese Communist Party does not allow any U.S.-based social media platforms to operate in their country. Okay, so that's interesting in and of itself.
That is interesting.
Yeah, and when TikTok got light that the House was going to vote on this, guess what they did? They went to their users and said, flood Congress with calls or you can't access your account. Tens of thousands of them did just that. And some of them threatened to kill Congress members who voted for this bill. Some of them said that if they without TikTok, they'll commit suicide. So what if China then says, wow, this is a great propaganda tool, a way for us to shape American, you know, thought in the direction we want it to go. And in a year from now or 5 years from now, when it's, you know, ready to take over Taiwan and it says, you know, and it just starts putting out, you know, propaganda via TikTok to American youth saying, you know, actually, Taiwan really was always a part of China, blah, 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 blah. Make sure, you know, you support, you know, the reunification efforts and all that kind of stuff. So do you want to have, you know, our main adversary have the ability to blanket our country with propaganda? I don't think so. So, I mean, that's where I do come into the realm of, you know, we need to play hardball with China. And it's not just this. It's the you know, intellectual property, stealing all the stuff, the spy balloons, just all this stuff. China, you know, obviously does not respect the United States right now. I think we need to play hardball with China.
Jim, last words on this, and I want to go into AI.
Yeah, so the bill that's being kicked around, and I would expect it actually to pass, and I think Joe Biden has even said, or the White House has said, that they would be willing to sign it. You know, just to clarify or to reiterate, the bill would the bill says, China, you have to sell TikTok to a Western company or an American company, or we will ban the app in the United States. And already, the market is moving in. Steve Mnuchin is organizing. He just announced this yesterday. He's former Treasury Secretary. He is gathering a group of investors to move in and buy TikTok, you know, if this bill passes and China is forced to sell. So, you know, it's not 100% a market deal, but, you know, would it be better for America's youth if TikTok was not owned and was not used as a tracking device by the Chinese Communist Party? Yes. Am I super comfortable with a federal law mandating that this happens? No. But what I do find it ironic is that, you know, the United States government seems very interested in manipulating American social media apps, like say Twitter and Facebook, and regulating and coordinating to silence and censor conservative speech. Yet they just let TikTok run rampant. That's just a weird dynamic to me. We'll see what happens, I guess. You know, it may not be the greatest market-based solution, but it might end up being better for America's youth and this country. So we'll see.
Yeah, no, very, very interesting, very kind of complex, tests out your worldview and ideologies when it comes to some of the stuff and the role of government. To be sure, I think this next topic pushes that limit even further, and that is the potential dangers of artificial intelligence. So this is a super interesting one. There's been a lot of attention paid to artificial intelligence since basically the release of ChatGPT-3 back in November of 2022. I contributed to the Glenn Beck and Justin's book, A Dark Future, which covers many aspects of this sort of emerging technology and others. Plenty others have sounded the alarm over the potential risks of a very advanced artificial intelligence. Most recently, though, a report has been produced, commissioned by the U.S. State Department, on the potential threats of artificial intelligence. The report, titled An Action Plan to Increase the Safety and Security of Advanced Artificial Intelligence, starts off talking about how these AI products are quickly advancing, how companies on the frontiers of this industry are clamoring over each other to advance it the fastest. The report talks about how they're all racing towards artificial general intelligence. This is a level of advanced artificial intelligence that puts it on par with the intelligence of humanity itself. It also discusses how AI safety workers at some of these firms are concerned that safety is taking a backseat to innovation, and the paper echoes fears about a potential extinction-level threat posed by artificial intelligence. And, you know, if you've watched some of our episodes before, I think the potential of this stuff as being threatening to society, from a job replacement thing to a human replacement thing, is pretty big and kind of hard to predict. So, you know, like those concerns out there, I would echo some of those concerns to be sure. But then the report sets out a series of recommendations that that could and should, according to them, be taken by the government to protect society against these potential dangers. So this is reading from the Time Magazine article, because Time Magazine got an advanced copy of this report before it was officially released. So reading from the Time Magazine article, it says, the report recommends a set of sweeping and unprecedented policy actions that, if enacted, would radically disrupt the AI industry. Congress should make it illegal, the report recommends, to train AI models using more than a certain level of computing power. The threshold, the report recommends, should be set by a new federal AI agency, although the report suggests, as an example, that the agency could set it just above the levels of computing power used to train current cutting-edge models like OpenAI's ChatGPT-4 and Google's Gemini. The new AI agency would require AI companies on the frontier of the industry to obtain government permission to train and deploy new models above certain lower threshold, the report adds. Authorities should also urgently consider outlawing the publication of the weights or inner workings of powerful AI models, for example, under open source licenses, with violations possibly punishable by jail time, the report says. And the government should further tighten controls on the manufacture and export of AI chips and channel federal funding towards alignment research that seeks to make advanced AI safer, it recommends. So, Jim, this feels like we have two options. It seems like it's A, let AI developers push this technology to the limit, concerns about potential consequences be damned, or two, regulate this into irrelevancy. Which do you choose?
Well, it's too late. It is way too late. And this is a steer that was never going to get roped. You know, once they started moving on the AI path, that's it. And it was always inevitable that this was going to happen. The idea that the United States should pass laws to rein in the advancement of AI technology, you might as well pass a law to regulate the tides, or to pass a law saying the moon must go, you know, must leave our orbit or pass a law saying that the sun must now rise in the west. I mean, it isn't, this is too late to stop. And this is such a bad idea. I understand the fear, but we're just going to have to live with it, because if the United States doesn't develop AI, then China is going to do it. Do you think other countries, especially China, is going to stop what it's doing in this sphere? Of course not. So do you want to get run over by Chinese AI, or do you just want to have everybody get run over by the same AI? I don't know. When I read that story, and I think I might have been the one that saw it and shared it with you, Donna, because I know how much you love this topic. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just laughing. The idea that you could pass a law to regulate and stop the advancement of AI. Again, it's impossible. It's already too late. It's way too late. We're just going to have to see what happens and deal with it, period.
Yeah, Chris, I think, is going to start the John Connor movement for Combating AI Institute at some point. So I'm very curious of what you think of this. Maybe it's a false dichotomy that I'm presenting here, whether or not to let AI just kind of run wild, or just like stomp it down with the government. What do you think between those two
options? No, I agree with Jim that the United States should not, you know, hinder itself in its development of AI, because Russia and China would then beat us to the, you know, to the punch, and they'd get it first, and they could quote unquote like rule the world. And I don't want that to happen, obviously. But at the same time, I am pretty concerned with some of the, you know, future scenarios in which AI could play a giant role in society. And it could definitely inhibit freedom, and it could definitely turn into a dystopian nightmare fairly easily. I just hope I'm not alive when that happens, to be honest with you.
There's a couple of, I mean,
so I'm so glad I Donnie, just real quick, sorry, but I'm so glad that I grew up before all this stuff was like mainstream, you know, even the internet, cell phones and all this stuff. I grew up in the good old days, man. It was so great. No, I'm serious. I'm not like joking around.
I hear you, man. I hear you. But yeah, so I'm reading this Time Magazine thing, and they're talking about all the interviews that they're doing with OpenAI and Anthropic and Google experts that are working on this stuff 24/7, and the conclusions that they're coming to about you know, how potentially dangerous this is, you know, like is in the Dark Future book, like there is a lot of concern over that. And once this technology hits that artificial general intelligence threshold, it's all bets are off. We don't even know what direction it'll go in after that, once it becomes basically on par in terms of intelligence of humanity itself. So lots of concerns, but then I can't help it. And maybe this is just my bias of kind of my last, I don't know, 15 years on this planet as a pretty staunch conservative libertarian, that when they started outlining these solutions to it, or these potential regulations or actions that the government can take on it, I couldn't help but you know, flinch at all of those things. I mean, there was the one comment that's, yeah, what do we, that's exactly what we need, another government agency. It's like, that's not what I want. And all of these different things that they're talking about, let's regulate the hell out of the chips that facilitate this sort of training of artificial intelligence. And I just know that if they were to do that, that some other country is going to take on that baton, and they're going to just outgrow us infinitely, because we're over here stifling our development of this technology, and they're just running forward with it. The report acknowledges that. It also acknowledges the idea of them wanting to ban open sourcing this stuff out of the fear that some bad actor is going to be able to get this technology and use it for nefarious purposes. But then they say, but other people, including I think Elon Musk, wants open source, to open source all of this stuff for transparency's sake. But let's say we do ban it in the effort of trying to stop bad actors from running wild with it. There's nothing stopping those people from just taking it and open sourcing it in a different country. So the report acknowledges all of this, but still maintains that like we should like smash this into the ground. And I think there's a lot of people that are very sympathetic to that idea. And when I say smash into the ground, maybe I'm being a little overblown with that. But in terms of the pace that it's going and where they want to limit it, you might as well be smashing it into the ground. And the one thing that I'll say for those people that are like championing that idea, safeguarding the nation and society or whatever, again, completely sympathetic to that idea. But there's a lot of potential good that's going to come out of this in the shorter term that you're going to be sacrificing.
You know, wait, 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 wait. Why is the music starting? What's going on?
He wants to get out of here.
No. Why is it starting? Because I got to say something that I think is really like important on this topic.
So, let's just finish that one point real
sure,
quick.
Sure.
Because like, you know, there is the potential of curing diseases. There is the potential of developing life-saving drugs. There is the potential of AI helping to unlock the codes to nuclear fusion. All of these things that could have infinite benefits for society. And I get it. We're scared of the potential of all of this stuff. But if we're smashing it, you know, we're drowning it in the bathtub or something like that, we might be forgoing all of these great things that can come along with it. Go ahead, Chris.
You are absolutely spot on that. With every technology, whether it's, you know, one of the first major advancements, which was fire, it can be used to cook food or it can be used to destroy, you know, a city. It's you know, it's not the technology in and of itself that is the problem. It's how it, you know, could be used. But one of the differences between AI and every single thing that's come before it is that, you know, before we developed AI, the human race has always been the smartest, you know, being on this planet. We aren't the, you know, the strongest, the fastest, but we can always outsmart anybody or anything. If we develop a new form of life that is incredibly, you know, potentially smarter than us, that could go haywire really fast. So, gee, you know, it's such a difficult thing, because if you say, fine, yeah, AI is great, you know, we can use it to diagnose, you know, cancer and, you know, in patients and all that kind of stuff. Yes. But there's also that dark side, that other side to it. It can be used to make a, you know, something that would make COVID-19 look like nothing. So
sure,
right. It, of course, has its good and bad. But I think really what it boils down to is in the hands of the people who, you know, control it or who, you know, have developed it. What are their goals? What are their objectives? What are they trying to achieve? And it's like that makes it a giant question mark. This goes back to, you know, atomic energy at the brink of World War II. It can be used to create energy, clean energy, or it can be used, like, you know, the Nazis wanted to do, to destroy worlds. So what, you know, what path will it take? It's up to the people who use it and deploy it, really.
Yeah, I know the producer has got his digital cane that he's trying to drag up off the stage, but I am curious about your viewpoints on this, Jim.
Yeah, Chris actually just made the point I was going to make. I mean, Oppenheimer, you know, cleaned up at the Oscars, and you know, a lot of that movie was about discussing, you know, it's about the dawn of the nuclear age and the dangers that entailed. And once the nuclear age began, once we split the atom, there was no going back. And so that's the same thing here with AI, and it can be used for good or it can be used for evil, just like any technology. So yeah, it reminds me very much about that movie and how you just, once you start that way, the old world's gone forever. And I think that's the case here with AI. The old world is gone forever. We now live in a world in which artificial intelligence exists and is getting, more advanced all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Very interesting topic. I think it's going to be a topic that's going to be a topic of discussion increasingly. This report is also intending to set up a, I don't know if it's a department or something, that's like basically exists just to inform policymakers on any aspect of artificial intelligence, from the threats to the benefits and everything in between. So I think that this is going to be something that's going to be a little bit more a part of the national conversation, that's going to be spurred along every time there's a new advancement, every time ChatGPT 4 and 5 and 6 comes out, every time the new, you know, deep fake thing or image generator or anything like that comes out. It's going to continuously push this topic to the forefront of some sort of national conversation. So I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later. And I think discussions like this are beneficial to kind of figure out how we can maneuver around this new problem that has very little connections to any other problem that we've dealt with in the past. But yeah, okay. Well, we basically stuck to an hour covering three topics in a somewhat confrontational manner. So I want to thank all of you for participating in this conversation with me. Jim or Chris, any last words you want to say? Anything you want to get off your chest before I wrap it up?
Wrap it up, man. That's hearing what I want to get off my chest.
Yep. I will thank everyone for tuning in to this episode of the In the Tank podcast. Join us every week for a new episode. If you would like, please write a review for us, especially those audio only listeners. Write a review for us on iTunes. Give us 5 stars. It'd be greatly appreciated. If you are listening to the audio only version, you can join us a day earlier on Thursdays at noon Central Time, where we are live streaming this on Facebook and X and Rumble and YouTube. And you can join the conversation, throw your comments and questions in the chat. Maybe we'll show your comment in the screen. Maybe we'll address your questions on the fly. Super chat functionality is enabled if you want to support the show that way. Or if you just want to hit that like button, share this content, subscribe if you haven't already, or leave a comment under the video. All those things would help break through the big tech algorithms that prevent content like this from being shown to more people. If you would like, you can follow us on X at In The Tank Pod, or you can send us your comments, questions, or suggestions for the show by emailing us at inthetankpodcast@gmail.com. Jim Lakely, where can the fine people find you?
At J Lakely on X, at Heartland Inst on X, and always visit heartland.org.
Fantastic. And Chris Talgo, what do you have to pitch today?
Well, if you like this debate, I think you should all come to Heartland Institute on March 21st for a tavern debate about basically the future of America. And we will be there in person, and it's going to be a great time.
Yeah, that is right. Always got to pitch more Heartland content. If you want more live streams like this, join us next week, Thursday at noon, same time, same place. Or you can tune in to Heartland's main channel on YouTube and Rumble for the Climate Realism Show, which is broadcast every Friday at noon Central Time. So having said that, I want to thank you all for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.